Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Equal Time Department here at Car Talk Plaza. And to what are you devoting equal time this week? Right answers?
How would I do that? No. I'm devoting equal time to Hanukkah.
Really? Hanukkah?
Well, I mean, we hear a lot about Christmas this time of year, but very little about Hanukkah.
And what makes you think that people want to hear about it from you?
Well, they probably don't want to hear it from me, but I have here a list of Hanukkah songs.
Oh, like I'm spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica?
No, that's a real song.
It is actually from our pal Tom Lehrer.
That's
but what,
right.
have you, what have you got?
The songs I have were sent to me by a listener named Arthur Williams, and they're all Hanukkah songs that never really caught on.
Like.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
How about Oi to the World? Yeah, there's a lot more.
Go ahead.
Here's one.
I was afraid of that.
How about Schlepping Through a Winter Wonderland?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Enough with the jingle bells. Deck the halls and clean up this schmutz. All I want for Christmas is for my son to call me once in a while. And how about this? I'll be home for Christmas. Don't worry about me. I'll sit in the dark. And finally, Silent Night? I should be so lucky.
Well, if you're hoping for a miracle for your car this season, don't call us. But if you have something a little more manageable in mind, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, it's Betty Branch from Frisco, Texas, and I have got a problem for you that you cannot solve.
I'm sure we can't.
Wait a minute. Where is Frisco, Texas?
It's a suburb about 20 miles north of Dallas.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
all right.
Gotcha.
Well, we know where that is. So what's up, Betty?
Okay. We were moving about a year ago, and I didn't want to send money with the movers, so I had a bucket about a gallon size of quarters.
Oh.
I had a lid on this bucket, but I turned a corner too sharp, and the bucket fell over. Quarters went everywhere. I thought I got them all up until about the next time I started the car and I turned a corner. Here I hear these quarters going, shh, underneath the car, stuck somewhere.
Oh.
Okay, so every time I turn a corner, it's shh.
Oh, they're in the car. So where was the bucket of quarters? It was
the
sitting
bucket
on the
of quarters
seat?
Was on the passenger side in the back seat on the floor.
And it tipped and it tipped over because you were careening around a turn.
Oh, I wouldn't say careening.
Well, but well, enough to tip it over and have the lid come off.
Yes.
And how many quarters do you think you had in there?
I had probably several hundred. I mean, it was like...
So this was your whole stash. You figured if all your other financials tanked, then you'd have this bucket of quarters to see you through maybe, what, a weekend?
There you go.
Okay.
One weekend in Vegas.
And when it tipped over, how many quarters did you save?
Okay, it went down about 2 inches, so it was... I probably lost like $50 or more.
I would say $30. So there were $30 worth of quarters
missing.
Oh, at least.
Unaccounted
least.
For.
Yeah, okay.
At
oh,
least.
Yeah. You know what some what kind of a car is it did you have?
I have an 06 Avalon.
Oh. I don't know if that car
my love in Avalon. No.
If that car doesn't have rear vents.
Doesn't have what?
Vents that are for air conditioning and heat that are under the front seats.
Okay.
And it's possible that the quarters have gotten in there, and they're made out of plastic, and they would make a terrible racket if they got in there and were rolling up and down, and you would never get them out.
Never.
Never.
That's such a long time.
And quarters are not magnetic, so you can't fish them out with a magnet.
Yeah, we tried that, and I got my smallest grandchild to stick her fingers in this little hole I found, but we still couldn't get but one or two out.
So what hole did she have them in? With a vent, like a ventilation duct?
I don't know what it was. She just lifted
it was up a hole.
The floor mat, and there was like a little slot. And
that,
she
that's
stuck
it.
Her...
Well, that's where they are.
Yeah.
Of all the bad luck, huh?
Oh. Well, you're gonna need those quarters.
Well, you might have to take it to someplace. They may have to actually remove the passenger seat.
Oh, but that's going to cost more than the quarters are worth.
Well, it's a matter of whether or not the noise is going to drive you nuts, Betty.
Oh, listen, I've got kids and grandkids. Noise doesn't bother me.
So if you can take the noise, leave them in there.
Well, forget it, yeah.
You never know. At some point, they'll stop moving around. One by one, they'll come out. Occasionally, you'll find a quarter on the floor.
Exactly.
And when you do, don't kick it. Just pick it up and put it in your pocket.
Okay, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, if you want to solve the problem, you'll have to take the seat out probably and remove that ductwork.
Well, I'm married to a man who can do everything, so maybe he could do that for me.
Oh, of course he can.
Yeah, suggest that. It'll keep him out of your hair for a couple of weekends.
I'm sure.
Good luck, Betty.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Bill calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey, Bill.
Hi.
Oh, we know you're a local because you say it right, Louisville.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I was recently schooled on the proper pronunciation of, as we say, Louisville.
Louisville?
No.
What's that?
So what's going on, Bill?
Well, I've got a 2000 Maxima, which has about 110,000 miles on it, and I've had this car since day one. And it does great, except one small problem.
Yeah.
When it gets down to below 20, around zero, which happens like five times a year in Louisville, my brakes don't work.
Oh, really?
What happens when you step on the brake? Does the foot go to the floor?
No, actually, you still feel pressure, but you just keep going.
Does it slow down a little bit?
Not so much.
Really? Well, that makes for pretty exciting driving.
Well, you know, the funny part is my son's the one who actually kind of discovered it because he was, you know, new to driving then.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, I'm like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, so he was right.
He was right.
And I've taken it to a couple of shops, and, you know, everything looks fine. The master cylinder's fine. One shop said, well, you know, flush the brake fluid out, and that may or may not fix it, which we did.
And it didn't. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I'm pretty confident in saying you're in deep doo-doo. No, I'm pretty confident in saying that you need a power booster.
Yeah, that's what it is.
This vehicle, like all vehicles, has power brakes, and the power is derived from using engine vacuum. So the suction that's created by every piston descending in its cylinder to suck in a mixture of air and fuel is also that same suction that's used to multiply the force that you apply to the brake pedal. And that booster is not doing its job. Either the diaphragm is rusted in place or it's frozen with water. There's moisture in there that freezes and is preventing the free movement of the diaphragm. Now
I think that's the more likely thing.
That's the more likely thing. And it's possible that the hose that goes to the diaphragm, that goes to the booster, may be clogged. You with me?
Yeah, actually, this makes sense.
It does?
It does. And my brother said it.
So it happened the first time to your son. How did he not crash the car?
Well, fortunately, we live in a neighborhood, and there's a couple of stop signs. And
which you went right through, right?
But, you know, literally after about 3 or 4 minutes, and I guess something obviously heats up, mm-hmm. then the brakes come back, and it works fine until the next morning.
Yeah.
And so the next morning, we had this discussion, and I tried it, and boy, he was right. He hit the brakes, and it just zinged right through the stop sign.
Nothing to laugh about. Of course, we're laughing. And, of course, you probably applied your handbrake, right? Does that work?
You know.
Now you don't.
You know, I was just so caught up in the thrill of the moment, I totally forgot about that.
Well, yeah, it's amazing how many people have forgotten, you know, some of the basic things you learn when you first learn to drive. And that's one of the things. They don't call them emergency brakes anymore because they don't want to be responsible for stopping the car in an emergency. All the manufacturers now call it a parking brake. You know, but in an emergency, you can stop the car pretty well with that thing. And, of course, you can always do one other thing. And people forget that you can put it in neutral.
Well, that makes sense,
but, you know, rather than crash the car, you know, shift the thing into neutral, and believe it or not, people are worried that you're going to blow the engine. In modern cars, you cannot blow the engine if the throttle is all the way to the floor, because the computer will shut the thing down and not allow the engine to go beyond the red line. And if you blew the engine, so what? Isn't it better than killing yourself? You know, so shift the thing into neutral or apply the handbrake. But it's hard to do all this when you're on the cell phone and trying to drive the car too. Anyway, good luck. But
right,
I'm pretty
thanks.
Sure you're going to find out you need a new booster.
Oh, fantastic.
All
thanks,
right,
guys.
See you, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888 877-227-8255, a lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Mary from outside of Philly. How are you guys doing
Hey,
today?
Mary.
Hi,
what's
Mary.
Going on? From outside of Philly, so no one can really identify
so you're
where you're from.
And you're not anywhere
okay,
else.
Okay, so just, you might as well have told us Pittsburgh. So what's up?
I drive an 07 F-150. I've only got about 16,000 miles on it. And about a week ago, I started hearing a clanging noise from the rear, kind of like right behind the seat. It only happens whenever I'm on the gas. And if I'm going slow, like parking lot speeds, it doesn't happen at all. It sounds like a horrible, you know, like I just got married and I've got a bunch of cans rattling behind me.
So make the noise for us, why don't you? You knew that was going to happen.
Right here, or it'd be really easy, but it's just a clanging noise. Actually, when it first started, I pulled over because I thought I had to be dragging something behind me, and it's very loud.
So is it one clang? So when you go to accelerate from a dead stop, you get a one clang?
No, it's continuous. As long as I'm on the gas pedal. If I'm just coasting, though, I can be going real fast and coasting, and it totally stops.
Really?
So when you're getting more than one clang, how frequently are you getting a clang? I mean, if you're driving along at 30 miles an hour, is it going clang, 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 clang?
Yeah, it's continuous. There's no rhythm to it. It's clang, 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 you know.
Okay. Not that it helps me, but it's good to know.
Well, it's a good stall for time. And it's coming from where, you say, behind your seat?
Right.
And this is a two-wheel drive?
No, it's four-wheel drive.
What's behind the seat? The gas tank is behind the seat.
Right, that's all I thought of.
It doesn't have a center differential because this is a real four-wheel drive, right? You have to shift it into four-wheel drive.
Right.
And you don't have any seats behind you.
No, if I roll up my windows, it kind of sounds like it's coming from under my seat, right next to me.
Do you wear the seatbelt?
I do wear the seatbelt.
So it's not dragging along the ground.
No,
we've
no.
Seen that
I look underneath and there's nothing hanging there.
I will tell you, we had a customer in the shop a few months ago with an Audi that had not a clang noise, but an annoying rattle kind of noise. And she had it on acceleration. It was like she'd get a little clang. And then sometimes when she decelerated, but not always, she'd get a clang. Mm-hmm. And it drove us nuts, and we had this car on the lift, and we test drove it, and everyone test drove it. And finally, there were two of us in the car. I had one guy was test driving it, and I was riding shotgun. And I said, oh, I know what it is. There's something under the seat. And what it was a flashlight that she had lost, a small flashlight. And under the right circumstances and the right amount of acceleration, it was rolling forward.
Oh,
and rolling backwards and hitting the rails that hold the seat to the floor. And it was something but it sounded for all the world, Mary, like it was underneath the vehicle.
Yeah,
that explains why we put it on the lift so many times. and we were ready to take off the exhaust system and remove all the heat shields. We had no idea what it was, and it was so it could be something like that. So I trust that you've been underneath this thing.
I took everything out of the inside. I've gone, you know, under the seats. I took out all the bungees and everything I had stored in there.
How about that roll of quarters that is unaccounted for? Have you had anyone else ride with you to try to help you?
I've had other people in the car that have heard it. And it's not an intermittent thing at all. I was hoping, you know, that it would just kind of
come
and
go.
Turn it on one day and it would stop, but no, it's all the time.
Mm-hmm. And when you looked underneath and saw and looked at the gas tank, did you see, you know, there's an exhaust hanger, there's a bunch of exhaust hangers. One of those could be loose and causing a clang clang. You know, what you have to
do is it would sound like it's coming from right behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do maybe is get under there with the engine off and the thing cooled off and try to move stuff, try to jiggle things, and maybe you can reproduce the clang.
Yeah.
Make sure you're in park, or if it's an automatic, and make sure the handbrake is set so the thing doesn't roll over you and crush you. We can't afford to lose any more listeners. But it could be that if you get under there and start shaking stuff around, or if you get some repair shop that'll put it on the lift for you, it might be even easier, and maybe they can shake stuff. Try shaking the tailpipe, and you may find out that's where you're getting the noise from.
Well, I'm actually under warranty, so
yeah.
I'm just going to take it to the dealer and see what they have to say. That's
the thing to do.
You can do that, but that's not the cowboy way.
No.
I know. Well, yeah. The only thing that's puzzling me about, you know, if it was something loose, why when I get off the gas, does it stop? You know, because there's like a lot of hills around me, and I'll be going 50 miles an hour down a hill, so it's not like I'm at a standstill, and it stops as soon as I'm off the gas pedal.
But if you're accelerating up this hill,
yeah,
you'll get the noise.
Yeah.
No matter how fast you're going.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it could be.
And coasting is very different from going up a hill. That's why you're not getting it torn down.
But there's a whole different dynamic going on here, you know. So it may be there's something wrong with your drive shaft, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe your drive shaft is coming apart. I wouldn't drive this thing another foot. Bring it in. Take it in. Do whatever you have to do, but get it there. So it may be something serious.
Yeah.
But when they tell you it's that roll of quarters, you'll be embarrassed. But good luck, Mary.
Thanks a lot.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, look, before we answer last week's puzzle, we got a letter this week about your memory.
My memory? I don't remember that.
Well, no, because it was addressed to me. But a guy named Tom wrote to say he thought it was odd that when we do Stump the Chumps that you can remember details of calls that we took months ago, and yet you never remember last week's puzzler.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Well, he has a name for it, actually.
What's that?
He calls it selective stupidity.
I like it.
I knew you would. Now, look. Do you remember last week's puzzler?
Of course I don't.
Well, it was a highway puzzler, and it involved a guy who noticed some strange behavior on the road in front of him.
Ah, the truck drivers changing lanes. I remember it now.
Oh, my God, you're exactly right. And I'll take you through the whole story and explain the answer in just a minute.
And we'll have more of your calls, too. So whatever you do, stay tuned.
Well, find myself some wheels. My automobile's about to pass away. Gotta try and pull some deals. I can't relate to paying the man to haul the old girl away. But I look in the paper and I see what they're selling, and there ain't no bargains today. But it's a pile of metal with plastic inside. Keeps on blue when I go for a ride. With spark on board and gasoline, I could lose it any minute if you know what I mean.
And even though the NPR Board of Directors' collective hair turns a little bit whiter every time we say it, this is NPR National Public Radio.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler. Mm. This is from my traveling salesman series, and it came from a fellow named Tom Green. Though I had to modify, obfuscate, and declarify it.
Something you're very, very good at.
Oh, thank you very much. Anyway, it goes like this. I work as a traveling salesman, and as such, I drive my own car on our busy highways and byways in an effort to call on as many clients as I possibly can on any given day.
Mm.
When I'm on the highway, I usually set my cruise control for a few miles per hour above the posted speed limit. And whether the highway is two or three lanes or more, I find myself mostly in the left lane.
Oh, that's not nice. Always sitting in the left lane.
Well, I know it's not nice, but he needs to do that to make the puzzle work.
So go ahead then.
He says from time to time, I'll come upon a group of big rigs, you know, 18-wheelers, semis, you know, those big trucks, and they're all traveling one behind the other. In the middle lane, for example.
Yeah.
Now, there may be just two or three, but sometimes there are half a dozen or more trucks. And as I come up on them and close the gap, quite often, one of the drivers in the middle of the pack, for example, pulls into the left lane in front of me as if he wants to go faster than the rest of the trucks and is getting ready to pass them.
Well, maybe he has to take an urgent haircut.
He may have to hit the Schnurling, you never know. But instead of passing the other trucks, he slows down.
Slows down?
He slows down. And the question is why? Is it just to spite me? Or is there another reason?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh.
But what these trucks are doing is something called drafting. Okay? Oh. The guy that's in front is actually encountering most of the wind resistance.
Yeah.
Okay? So, but the other thing he's doing is the trucks behind them are actually being drafted or pulled along by him.
Sure.
And when they do this, those trucks actually get better mileage, and they can go farther and faster on less fuel.
Okay,
course.
Because the guy in front is kind of, you know, running the running resistant, breaking the wind for breaking the wind is a bad term.
Don't say it that way.
He's encountering the wind resistance, and interestingly,
and all the other guys are getting the advantage of that.
They're getting the advantage, and interestingly, the guy in front is also getting better mileage because they're pushing him along, believe it or not.
Oh.
But when one of them pulls out to pass, he's no longer being pulled along by his buddies. And in fact, he is now encountering all that wind resistance. And even though he doesn't want to,
He slows down.
He can't help it. So it wasn't for spite. It's just the way it works. Do we have a winner?
Yeah. Our winner this week is Dorothy Smith from Bethany, West Virginia. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Dorothy's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com. With which she can get a box set of disrespectful music CDs.
You know, I've never seen a box set of our CDs.
Well, that's because there's not really a box. We just put a rubber band around them. I admit it's a liberal use of the term box set.
I say so. But these are the CDs we've made that feature great songs about heaps, junk boxes, oil burners, bad drivers, rude gestures, and everything else that my brother specializes in.
Exactly.
Now, there are three CDs. There's the Car Talk Compendium of Disrespectful Car Songs. There's Born Not to Run and Stairway to Heepdom. And the set of all three is yours, Dorothy, if you want it, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Congratulations, Dorothy. I bet she had no idea what a big day this was going to be when she woke up this morning.
And if she had known, I'm sure she would have stayed in bed. Anyway, we'll have a new Puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. But before we get to that, we'll try to solve a few more car problems. What do you say, Tommy?
Well, stranger things have happened.
A vote of confidence. That's what I like. Give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, fellas. How's it going? This is Antoine from Dallas, Texas.
Hey, Antoine.
Antoine.
What's going on, man?
Dallas.
Oh, yeah, I got some issues. I've got a 2000 Jeep Cherokee with about 160,000 miles on it, and I'm having some squealing noises that's coming from the belt area under, like, three different conditions, and I'm too cheap to take it into the shop.
Good.
I changed the belt on it, and I changed the pulley off of the tensioner, but whenever I cut on the AC, if I'm at a standstill and I cut on the AC and I take off, I hear a squealing noise.
Did you say you changed the pulley, but did you change the tensioner itself or just the pulley and the bearing?
Just the bearing itself. I didn't change the pulley. I just changed the
But this has a spring loaded tensioner.
No, it's actually I don't think it's spring loaded. I mean, I had to it has an adjustment kind of like on a tractor trailer when you change a belt on like a Peterbilt or Kenworth or whatever. It's that same setup.
Oh, this is a Cherokee or a Grand Cherokee?
Just a regular Cherokee.
Okay, then it has the cheap thing that tightens with a bolt. All right.
Yeah.
Well, you may not have it tight enough.
Well, I'm afraid to tighten it up anymore because I don't want to break the belt. But it back when it was, you know, it was hot, it squealed when the AC came on. And now that it's cold, I mean, it squeals when the heat is on also. So you think I haven't tightened it down enough?
Well, I think so. I mean, anytime you put an extra load on a belt that's loose, you increase the chance of it squealing. And if it's just on the hairy edge of being tight enough, when you ask it to turn the compressor, it's going to start to squeal. If you ask it to make the power steering pump do more work, for example, it'll squeal. That's why power steering belts often squeal when you get the thing into a tight turn, like you're trying to park. You'll get that, yee, 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 and as soon as you let go of the wheel a little bit, it stops. So it may be that you're afraid to tighten this thing too much.
Oh, okay.
If you push on the longest stretch of the belt, in other words, if you find the piece of belt that's the longest run between two pulleys, if you push on that, how far will the belt deflect?
I'll say about an eighth of an inch at the most, because it's on pretty tight.
You got it way too tight.
That's pretty tight.
Well, then it probably isn't that. Then the most likely thing then is maybe there's something, either you have pulleys out of alignment or there's something wrong with the main pulley that's on the crankshaft.
Okay, I thought about that also, because I have a third condition that it happens. Now, it's funny, if I park the Jeep, you know, in 20 and 30 degree weather,
yeah,
when I crank it up in the morning, it'll make that same squealing sound before about a split second. It'll just like, eek.
Oh, really?
I thought it was the same thing. It could possibly be the main pulley also.
Well, that main pulley is actually two pieces. There's the inner piece that bolts to the crankshaft, and then the outer piece that the belt goes around, and they're separated by a piece of rubber. Okay, so it's not a solid metal connection, and that thing is a damper. Okay, so it's possible that that piece of rubber is actually slipping. And if that's the case, eventually it's going to come flying off, especially with that belt as tight as you have it. You'll be driving along someday, and you'll see this thing whizzing by you on the highway. Say, what the heck is that? Hey, that's
my... And the noise will be gone.
That's my pulley. Yeah, so the way you're going to find this out, I suppose, is to take the belt. Well, you don't even have to take the belt off, but it would be easier. And try to grab the outside of that pulley and move it in and out. Okay, like towards the back of the truck and then towards you. And if you can move the outside of this in and out, you know, a quarter of an inch or so, then you need a new crank pulley.
Okay.
That's probably what it is. And don't go tightening that belt anymore. Well, when you replace this, you'll have to replace the belt too, because you probably damaged it by having it so tight, but maybe not.
Okay, well, yeah, I didn't think it was because the belt wasn't tight enough. Like
no, I think you got it. I think you got it plenty tight, Antoine. Okay. Good luck. Anything else you want us to wreck today while you're at it?
No, that'll be it.
Okay, that's enough.
a pleasure talking to you.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye bye.
Okay.
Bye bye. 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Heather in Medford, Oregon.
Hi, Heather in Medford. What's going on?
Well, I have a 1990 Toyota Camry, and there's a puddle of water that accumulates not too far from where we live.
1990? Yeah.
Yes, it's got over 300,000 miles on it. She just clicked over.
Really?
And, so when I go through this water puddle that's, you know, probably a few inches deep, I lose my power steering. And I'm going at a very slow speed because there's a stop sign that's, you know, just past the water puddle. And typically I'm trying to turn into the Minute Market that's there, and it's kind of on the side of their parking lot.
Yeah.
And I just completely lose my power steering. And then a few seconds later, it's totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because the belt got wet.
Wet.
Because you're driving through the puddle, and the belt, the power steering unit on this thing, if I'm not mistaken, is pretty close to the ground.
Yes.
So it's vulnerable. I mean, it doesn't care if it gets wet, except when the belt gets wet, the water acts as a lubricant. And if the belt is already too loose, then it's going to have a greater tendency to slip.
Okay, well, that explains it, because the last time I changed my alternator, I realized that one of the bolts is missing that tightens the serpentine belt.
Uh-huh.
And I jimmy-rigged with a random
block of wood.
What
did you do?
No, I'm always curious. At what mileage are you allowed to do stuff like this? When, you know, to jerry rig something. Because if the thing had 100,000 miles on it, you would have gone to the end of the earth to find
it's
that
totally
bolt.
True. It's very true.
But when it gets to like 200, it's like, well, it's gonna blow up any day now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what I do.
If you need a primer on how tight to tighten this belt, you may want to contact Antoine, our previous caller, because he's good at really socking those belts down tight. That thing will never slip on you if you use his method.
Yeah, I could never get it as tight as Antoine.
No, you don't want to.
I don't think so.
By the way, whether they're serpentine belts or not, if you take the greatest span in any belt, that is the greatest area where the belt isn't touching a pulley, you should be able to deflect it about a half an inch when you push on it with your finger. You know, and if it's any tighter than that, you run the risk of burning things out, because it puts so much extra load on the bearings of those devices, like the alternator and the water pump and whatever, that they'll fail long before the belt breaks. So, but you may have a belt that's too loose. But there also used to be, maybe 180,000 miles ago, a plastic guard underneath the motor that in fact protected the belts from water and stones being splashed up there.
That's probably gone.
But even if you had that there, if you drive through a puddle that is too deep, it wouldn't make any difference if you had that thing or not. The belt's going to get wet. But it wouldn't be a bad idea to look at the belt and see if it's too loose. Or if it's all cracked and worn out. You know, if it is, you can replace it.
Okay.
Try not to lose any of the bolts this time.
I'll do my best. Thank you so much.
All right, Heather. Thanks for your call.
Have a great day.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there. This is Kim from Cumberland, Rhode Island.
Hey, Kim. What's going on?
Well, my problem concerns kitty litter and automobile aerodynamics.
I don't think they go together,
well,
but let's see what you can do here.
I can make it work.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I have two beloved daughters, one of whom attends Smith College in Western Massachusetts, and one at George Washington University in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I have a small car, Subaru Forester, which certainly isn't large enough to accommodate all their needs in transport.
Oh, no.
So I bought a car top carrier. And as it turns out, you can't drive on the expressway with a car top carrier empty, that is to say, on a return trip. So my solution
ballast.
Was to buy kitty litter.
Yeah.
And the reason you can't drive empty is the thing goes...
So when I took my daughter off to Smith, bought 50 pounds of kitty litter.
Uh-huh.
It was cheap. It molds to the interior of the car top carrier. That worked pretty well. However, when I took my daughter to Washington, D.C., on a Sunday morning, no litter was to be found. So I bought three cases of bottled water at the 7-Eleven. That worked okay.
Okay, yes, I like that.
So here's the dilemma. I now have 100 pounds of kitty litter and three cases of water in my garage that I don't need.
Yeah. And you can't get rid of it.
That I can't get rid of. Well, I actually have two cats, but they will not use this brand of kitty litter.
Yeah, gotcha.
So here's my I have two questions and a bonus question.
Yeah.
The first question is, can I safely drive with the carrier empty?
Oh, you already stated that as a fact. You said I can't.
Well, that's the manufacturer's instructions. They say you can't drive an expressway without a minimum of 50 pounds. What do you think?
Have you tried it?
No.
Well, if you are going to try it, Kim, you have to try it at night.
So when it blows off, just keep going.
So there's nobody behind me.
So yeah. There's nobody behind you, and there's nobody you can cut your lights. Nobody will be able to read your license plate number if there is somebody behind you.
Okay.
They must be afraid that the thing is going to vibrate so much that it could come
Fly
loose
off.
From its moorings, so
huh?
to speak.
And hit the guy behind you.
And hits, yeah, they're worried about liability.
I'm sure. So the second question, of course, is then what can I put in the carrier as ballast besides maybe cases of beer to take to the colleges when I pick them up that I can leave behind?
Well, certainly cases of beer. Well, the bottled water. The kids will drink the bottled water. Every kid drinks bottled water.
Yeah, that might be okay.
The bottled water and the kitty litter you could bring to the college, and then when you got there, and you could just go to any auto repair shop, and most auto repair shops use this stuff called Speedy Dry, which is just kitty litter.
To soak up the oil, et cetera.
Oil spills,
yeah.
Exactly.
Excellent.
So you haven't emptied the kitty litter into you. It's still in the bag.
No, it's in the bag.
Well, that's good.
That would,
perfect.
Yes. No, good idea. So here's my bonus question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did I get better mileage driving to Washington, D.C. with this thing on?
Because you were probably driving slower.
On the highway, maybe.
Yeah, and,
well,
and you know, if you were, with the thing, with no carrier on the top, you were probably driving at 75. And with the thing on, worried that it was going to blow off because you installed it. You may have been driving
55.
At 55 or 60, and that makes a huge difference. And I think the average person doesn't realize how much speed eats into your mileage.
Well, I certainly think I'm probably a little more apprehensive in driving with it on than with it off.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And that I would bet you that's what explains the difference in the mileage.
No question about it.
Very good.
But if you drove at the same speed with the thing on and off, you'd get worse mileage with the thing on there. Oh, yeah, it's like driving with a bunch of bricks on your car. Oh, no, it's terrible. I mean, it's aerodynamic as much as it can be, but it is an impediment to good mileage, for sure.
Very good.
So leave it home.
I will.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for your
time.
Call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, look, before we get to this week's new puzzler, we have to take a short break.
This is like a dramatic pause and a cliffhanger, isn't it?
What do you mean?
You know, when you're at the most exciting point and they say, don't go away, we'll be right back with the dramatic conclusion.
No, actually, I think it's more like when the dentist asks if you want to pause and rinse your mouth out before he drills some more.
Yeah, that's a better analogy. So when we come back, what kind of a puzzler will you have for us?
Well, I don't want to give away too much, you know me, but I will say it's from my automotive mishaps series.
Ah, very good.
Yes, and we'll be back with that and more of your car questions in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
I danced the whole night long at my high school reunion. Sang my new hit song at my high school reunion. So nothing could go wrong at my high school reunion. But heading out the door, they saw my Plymouth Belvedere. Plymouth Belvedere, yeah, a Plymouth Belvedere. Rusty, broken down, that car is killing my career. But to give it up would devastate my poor old daddy dear. So I've got to keep on driving that Plymouth Belvedere. I sparkled and I shone at the country club gathering. Never was alone at the country club gathering. Truly in my zone at the country club gathering. But then the valet brought around my Plymouth Belvedere. Plymouth Belvedere, yeah, a Plymouth Belvedere. Rusty, broken down, that car is killing my career. But to give it up would devastate my poor old daddy dear. So I've got to keep on driving that Plymouth Belvedere.
And even though the NPR graphic designer double checks to make sure she photoshopped us out of the holiday card whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about what? Cars, car repair, but right now, the new Puzzler.
Yeah.
And this was submitted with recently by a fellow, well, 1927, by a fellow named Roger Darby. And I didn't have to change this too much.
Really?
This was pretty
good. This guy's crazy enough.
And I want you to pay attention because there are lots of hints here.
Yeah, okay, good.
Lots of hints, and if you don't pay attention, you're gonna miss the important ones, all right?
Yeah, sure.
I live in rural Illinois, you know, way out in the sticks. And I was driving home from work one very rainy day, and I saw a familiar car coming toward me in the oncoming lane. Mm-hmm. I recognized this vehicle because I had seen it many times around the neighborhood, and it was the same make and model and color, and I'm pretty sure the same year as the car I was driving. Suddenly, without notice, his car started hydroplaning. Don't forget, it was raining.
Yeah.
Right? And it was out of control in this heavy rain and was headed directly into my lane. Unable to avoid the collision, we hit headlight to headlight. That is my left side, my driver's side headlight, hit the left side headlight of his car.
Yeah.
Okay? We were both wearing our seatbelts and our airbags deployed. Okay?
Yeah.
But I was injured to the point of being hospitalized, but the other driver walked away from the accident pretty much uninjured. Mm-hmm. The damage was almost identical to our cars. What was the major reason? The major reason for our differences in injuries. Now, there should be some conditions here.
Yeah.
First of all, I didn't have any pre-existing conditions. I wasn't impaired in any way.
Yeah.
We're both about the same height and weight.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't carrying a hot cup of coffee between my thighs. It spilled and required hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it made no difference what speed we were going at because the combined speeds are the combined speeds, right?
Yeah.
If I was going 20 and he was going 80, it was like we were both going 50. Okay.
Or
if I was parked and he hit me at 100.
Good.
Right?
Yeah.
So the question is, what's the major reason for the differences in our injuries? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a Hill Country Model 3595 heavy-duty garage door opener with 3/4 horsepower motor, rugged I-beam rail and chassis support bracket, super quiet chain drive, motor vibration isolation system, dual sprocket assembly, chain spreader, continuous lubrication gear case, automatic locking system, and a nice Fusion hybrid to park behind it. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But if you have a question about your car, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Who's
this? How are you?
This is Tara from Arvada, Colorado.
Arvada.
Mm-hmm. It's right on the outskirts, kind of near Golden.
Okay.
Near the foothills.
Yeah. We got you. So what's going on?
Well, my dad has been very worried about me. My Jeep, I have a 1997 Jeep Cherokee Sport, and if I hit a pothole, it'll start shimmying if I'm at high speeds between 60 and 70. And when I mean shimmying, I mean it feels like the car is going to break apart.
You should be so lucky.
I know. Well, it's paid for, so it's paid for. That's what I could say. But
if you're driving at a slower speed, nothing happens?
Well, I mean, it does a little bit, and sometimes I'll have to slow down.
Yeah, okay.
But usually it's, you know, at 50, 60, 70, and I think one of our highways here, I think the speed limit is 75, which is one that I usually drive. And so I've had people tell me that I also have some wear on my back right tire that's a little bit more than the rest of them.
That's doing it.
I'm only kidding.
No.
I've had people tell me that I need to have my tires inflated. I need new tires. I need an alignment. I need struts. I need shocks. And I'm just wondering, because the person who said I needed struts and shocks said it'd probably be about $600. And I care for my dad, so that's a little pricey.
Also, Dad's forking over the money for this.
And all these people are probably right. You need all those things.
Yeah,
okay.
But the thing you need more than anything is a new Jeep.
Well, you know what? I would love to do that if I could, but with the economy right now, I'm trying to keep this one taped together. So,
well, the first thing you should do, is slow down.
Okay.
Because this is dangerous, and when you lose control like this and it starts to shimmy, I imagine
right.
It's very difficult to get it out of this.
It is. I mean, I have to make sure that I'm on the outside lane so that I can pull over because I need to slow down so quickly. So, yeah, it is very dangerous.
You should never be driving at that speed.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of the problems is that the suspension of this vehicle was at best, what's the right word for it? Barbaric. You know, even when the thing was brand new, because they had to make compromises. They had to make a vehicle that could be used off the road, which is, you know, one of the selling points.
Right.
But they also had to make it primarily be usable on the roads where
right.
most people drive.
Right.
So, and they had to make it cheap. And they had to use technology that was 25 years old.
Right.
So
right.
They did that, and this vehicle has what's called a live axle, which means it has no independent suspension in the front or rear. So its handling right off the bat is pretty lousy. So when anything goes wrong, like if your tires are worn or overinflated or underinflated, if your shocks are worn out, if your ball joints have play in them, any of those things or the combination of all those things can make it do exactly what your vehicle's doing. So when they realized it did this, they, in their wisdom, installed a piece called the steering damper, which is a shock absorber that's supposed to eat up those vibrations. So when this steering wheel starts going left, right, left, right, left, right, the steering damper is supposed to damp that and stop it from doing it, or at least minimize it. But that may be worn out too. So you may need a steering damper, but you may need some of these other things too. You may need ball joints. And, you know, the thing's 12 years old, so you could need any of these things. You may need shocks. So the first thing you need to do is go buy yourself a football helmet. Because you can't drive this thing anymore without proper protection. So you need to slow down. And eventually, it's going to start happening at lower speeds. So I think it's important that you get it checked out immediately. And if they can't find anything wrong with the shocks or the tires or the ball joints, make sure they check that steering damper.
The steering damper.
But it's more, when if it's doing it as badly as you suggest, it's more than that that's wrong.
Okay.
You know, and of course, a worn-out tie rod can do the same thing, too.
A worn-out tie rod?
Tie rod, yeah. So all the steering mechanisms should be checked.
Okay.
You know,
and don't drive at any 70 miles an hour.
I won't. I'm going to take different ways to work now until I can get it all fixed. So
excellent.
You guys always give such great advice, and I know Pop's been worried about me, so he'll feel better that I talk to you.
Yeah, we ordinarily give lousy advice, but when it's safety-related, we really kind of bear down, you know? And we put our thinking caps on. So we don't want to see you get hurt, Tara, or hurt anyone else, because when it's out of control like this, you don't know where this thing is going.
Right.
And thank God there are no, like, mountain roads out there that you could drive off of and kill yourself. I mean,
thank goodness for that.
See you later, Tara.
All right, you guys have a great day.
You too.
Good luck.
Hi.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Matt from Salt Lake City.
Hey, Matt. What's going on?
Well, I've got a 1991 VW Westphalia.
God. No, it's fun.
Bad already, huh?
No, go ahead.
It's getting cold here in the mornings, and I'm having trouble shifting into first and second gear. After about 20 minutes of driving, though, it shifts normally. And I was trying to figure it out, and it seems like it's only when the van's moving. If I'm at a stop sign or something like that and, you know, pushing on the clutch and just moving around, it moves fine. But,
yeah. Well, it may be. Now that the weather's getting cold, so you've had this thing a long time or not?
No, I've only had it for a couple months now.
Oh, so you didn't know that this is why the last guy sold it.
right.
Now you do.
I just put a new clutch in it.
Yeah.
You put a new clutch in it?
Yeah, I sure did, about 500-600 miles ago.
Okay. Hoping to solve this problem?
Yeah, well, the clutch was shot when I bought the thing, so I had to get it to drive it home.
Well, it may be that you're going to have to change to a less viscous lubricant in the transmission.
Okay.
The transmission has its own lubrication, and it probably has 90-weight gear oil in it. But you may find out that in the winter you can't use 90-weight. You might have to go down to something less thick. Because and that's why when you drive it, once you've driven it around a lot and you've heated up that oil, it's okay.
Right.
You know, so what you could do, if that didn't work, you could...
Put it in your living room.
Right. No way you can put this thing in a heated garage overnight, is there?
Even the garage gets cold here.
How about, ready for this? One of those small charcoal grills that you could slide underneath the transmission.
There you go.
I would take it to a repair shop. Have them drain out the transaxle oil,
okay,
and put in a lighter oil, okay. And there are lots of additives. There are probably there's certainly a synthetic oil you can use,
right.
with a maybe a Teflon additive, something slippery, and you try it. And the alternative is you just wait until it warms up, and you know. But if it's this bad now, imagine what this is going to be like in January.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you're gonna have to make some quick decisions here, and if it doesn't work, it means there's something wrong with the synchros in the transmission. You know, if putting lighter oil in there, but you could probably for the winter at any rate put maybe 30-weight oil in there as long as you didn't drive the thing extensively because it wouldn't be thick enough to really lubricate the internal parts of the transmission adequately, and you'd have to remember to take the stuff out in the summer, otherwise the transmission would what? Melt. So this, but if this is all that's gone wrong with this thing, Matt, consider yourself very lucky.
Well, there's a long list.
So we'll be hearing from you every week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we
I'll
can
put
take
you
it.
On speed dial.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Let us know you make out putting the lighter oil in there. That's step one.
Sounds good.
All right, see you later, man.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Laura calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Great. I am calling you for financial advice.
Yeah.
I work as a recruiter for a college, and my job requires me to travel all over the state. And when I travel, I have two options. I can either rent a car for free and have all of my gas reimbursed, or I can drive my own car, and I'm reimbursed 55 cents a mile. So up until now, I've pretty much been driving my own car. And I've been getting, like, an extra $500 a month, pretty much. So I've put about 1,700 miles on my car just in the past 2 months.
Oh.
I have a 2001 Camry with over 120,000 miles. And I want my car to last as long as possible, but at the same time, I really like getting the extra money. So I wanted to ask your advice if there's kind of a particular time or a particular type of trip, like city driving, where I should rent a car versus drive my own car.
Well, look, the IRS made up this 55 cent a mile number, and it's pretty much a wash in that if you took this money and put it aside, okay, like you're doing, and smartly doing, then it would be there to do the inevitable repairs and maintenance that driving
you'll
these,
need.
That you'll need, exactly. Okay, now the only way this can work out in your favor is if there's some way that you can doctor up the records to show that you're driving a lot more.
Than I would never do that, though.
Oh.
Well, that's the only way it's going to work.
I'm an honest person.
So if you want your car to last a long time,
drive
one of their cars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, here's my take on it. If you feel very comfortable driving your car, in other words, you feel safe that you're used to the way the car handles, the predictability of it, visibility that it has, then you should drive your car and take the 55 cents and don't worry about it. On the other hand, if you don't mind driving, you get your choice of the car you're going to drive when you rent one?
I've just rented a car for the first time this week, and I got to choose between a red Impala and a black Impala, Chevy Impala. So
that's
I don't
not
get
bad.
A whole lot of choice.
Well, I was going to say you could use this as an opportunity because your 01 Camry, as we know, is not going to last forever.
Yeah.
And you could use this as an opportunity to scout around for your next car.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So, and there's no better way to assess whether or not there's a good fit between you and a car than to drive it for a long trip.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, around town all day or whatever it is, but to be behind the wheel, you know, a 20-minute test drive with the salesperson sitting in the passenger seat is never enough for you to determine if you like a car. It really isn't. You know, but if you could turn out to dislike a lot of cars if you drove them long enough to notice.
Yeah.
You know, so you might, if you drove this Impala for another couple of days, you might say, oh, what a great car this is. This is going to be my next car, and I like the red one. Or you might hate the thing.
Right.
So I think if you could use it as an opportunity to sample a bunch of cars, that could work out pretty well. But if you're only going to be between red and black Impalas, then I don't know what you should do.
Well, I think maybe on a normal day when they have more cars in the lot, I would have more choice. So I might start renting more often.
So you can make it a last-minute decision. You can call them like the day before and say, hey, do you have any Nissan Altimas in the lot? And they might say, yeah, we have one of those. And say, okay, reserve one for me. And that day you don't drive your Camry.
All right. I think I'll do that because I really want my car to last a long time. But at the same time, it feels pretty good to get an extra $500.
You can't have it both ways.
A cautionary tale. My brother once had this same idea.
What?
That he wanted his car to last a very long time. And it has lasted a very long time. It's a 1977 Fiat. And is he sorry he still owns this thing? So be careful what you wish for.
All right.
Anyway, drive some other cars and you may fall in love with something and you may find the next car.
Well, thank you so much for your advice.
All right, see you later.
Good luck.
All right, have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David, the Calves of Belleville Green. We had help this week from Catherine Frau Blücher, Fenolosa, Hannah McBride, and Chris Cuff. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Chesapeake Chicken Cheek, Fenugreek, Sauteed Leek, and Sol Veronique Stuff Your Beak Restaurant Week is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. My brother's official co-pilot is Yvette DePence. Our repo man is Carmine Now. Our PR specialist is Hugh Lion Sack. Our sensitive language advisor is Holly Schmidt. My puzzle assistant is Norma Lee Bogus. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the textbook and falafel peddlers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 950, rifle through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Or if you prefer, you can call the Shameless Commerce Division for Car Talk gifts at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, by popular demand, you can listen to A Car Talk Christmas Carol.
Yes, this is an old chestnut in which we play the rapacious, greedy, no-good Scrooge brothers. The cast includes our poor, put-upon employee, Bob Cratchit Siegel, and his fragile, too-sincere son, Tiny Ira Glass. I think Siegel's back is still sore from carrying around Tiny Ira. The guy's like 6'1", 220.
That's A Car Talk Christmas Carol, narrated by our old pal Daniel Pinkwater, and available all week over at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the ghost of Andy Warhol drops by to remind us that our 15 minutes were up 45 minutes ago whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.